The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly today, Fellaini felony. What did Ryan Shawcross say about Marouane's sister? And has the big man played his last game now for the Everton? Chelsea come home beaten from Japan after Sunday morning lesson from Corinthians. Will they be disoriented Wednesday with Leeds? There's Benteke Taka as Paul Lambert enjoys attractive villa with Paul. And end of day's checklist gets another tick as QPR win game. Harry Redknapp, like James Bond, both enjoying success with a score by Adele. Elsewhere, there's the worst football match you've ever seen. Serie A, no connection intended. Post, Sid and the Flea Tiger showdown, and so much more in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everybody. And well, as we approach the festive season, it's especially festive feeling here in the pod today. Sean Ingalls in.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry.
Hello.
And Owen Gibson as well.
Hello there.
Hi, Owen. And Sean, you were just explaining why Do They Know It's Christmas, one of your favourite songs, is possibly the most lyrically inaccurate records ever recorded.
Well, they talk about, you know, where nothing ever grows, right. No rain or river flows.
Again, wrong.
Wrong. And they say, do they know it's Christmas time at all? So it's not just wrong.
It's not part of their culture.
It's patronising and condescending.
There won't be snow in Africa this Christmas. Yeah. But Barry, you stepped in. Sorry, I'm going to recreate the entire conversation for the benefit of our listeners. You then stepped in and said...
that, as far as I know, Majura wrote it in the back of a taxi on the back of a cigarette box in 2 minutes flat and probably didn't have time to do that much research into the geographical, you know,
the former Ultravox frontman showing a very immature understanding of of African.
I didn't expect 25 years later to hear Sean Ingle.
Yeah,
but at the same time, didn't Bob Geldof he haranguing Boy George to come over, and he had to fly over from New York in Concord. So the fact that they had about 3 or 4 days to prepare it suggests that Midge had a little bit more time than Barry suggesting.
It's a fascinating backstory. Do you know what I'd love to see? A documentary really exposing the evil heart behind this supposed do-gooders.
Well, apparently it was a white Christmas in the recording studio because status quo.
Yeah, that's enough. Yeah. Right. Now, in other news, Barry, another good weekend for Barry's bones.
Was it?
Yeah. Well, didn't you have a funny feeling about Liverpool Villa? At least you were tweeting about it after, no?
Oh, that's just after timing, yeah.
Oh, was it?
No, I don't think I said anything about it on... Well, we were praising Villa on Thursday and saying they had a great young team and they're a work in progress, and I was very surprised on Saturday to see that they were 9-1 outsiders to beat Liverpool.
9-1.
But then Ed Malin, who occasionally writes for us, pointed out that Liverpool are always ridiculously underpriced in betting markets because of the huge Asian support for them on a weekly basis, which hadn't occurred to me, but that makes sense.
Sean, resist.
No, I'm talking more generally. It's quite interesting that Brendan Rodgers from 17 games has got only 22 points.
The same number
as Roy Hodgson, which is quite interesting. And also their home record. Actually, the Hodgson season, they were really good at home. They won 12 out of 19 games. Since then, they won 6 games last season at home from 19. And this year, they've only won 3 from 9. And the 3 teams they've beaten, Southampton, Wigan, Reading, are 17th, 18th and 20th in the table.
Well, the point at which Rodgers said they wouldn't finish second, the odds should have immediately lengthened, shouldn't they? Everyone should know at that point they were going to lose at home.
It was extraordinary, that was it. For me, the ambition is to grow higher. We're 11 points off second, and that can all turn around very quickly. So you need to get consistency. 11 points, it means nothing really, is it? How many points are they off the bottom three, just out of interest?
Russell.
At that point, Liverpool have won 3 games in a row. Southampton, Udinese...
Seven points off the bottom.
Okay. Well,
I've had a lot of stick for suggesting that Liverpool are a mid-table side, but if you look at the table, they're 12th.
Statistically, you're right.
They look a bit knackered, but some people are saying this had been coming. Villa had looked impressive against Man United before they threw it away at the end, and that had been a little bit the story with them.
Well, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it? There's a bit of naivety there, but going forward, that second goal was sublime, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I was chatting, bizarrely, when I was in Dortmund a couple of weeks ago, I was the Villa press officer, who I used to know, who used to be a boxing correspondent for the Sunday Times, was there. So we were just chatting about sort of Villa and the lowdown, and it's very interesting talking about how, you know, the bunch of young players, they will run all day for Lambert. Lambert doesn't really kind of, obviously cares, he wants them to be highly skillful, but he just, at the moment, he's got players that will work for him. While he was mentioning names who I won't mention, but from previous Villa incarnations who weren't running, who had moaned, would never blame, you know, the goal went in, it was their fault, they would put the blame on someone else. And he said Lambert's got rid of that culture.
And I shan't name names.
Yeah, can you do that thing where you can't actually license the names? You do a name like it, so it could be like Warren Tent or something like that.
One of the
it was Warren Tent, one of those players.
If you go for for one of the surnames, you might not be far away.
Might not be far away. Does it begin with a W?
I'm not saying anymore.
Well, come on.
No. He told me this. Yeah, I've just kind of mentioned generally.
So W is quite near Y, which is Young. Cashley Bung.
Yeah, let's move on. If you look at what Lambert,
I love
did
word
it,
games.
If you look at what Lambert did at Norwich, he basically, you know, he took a very unheralded team, didn't he? But again, sort of players who'd worked for him and didn't have egos, and he looks like he's trying to repeat the trick.
Absolutely, six academy graduates.
The average age of the Villa team to beat Liverpool was 23 years and 4 months. So that's young. Youngest team they've ever put out in the Premier League.
Right, and this Benteke fellow.
Yeah, Lambert has every right to feel a bit smug because he was getting a lot of grief from the media for not picking Darren Bent, but Benteke has proven that he has all the tricks Bent has and many more besides, because Bent's basically just
does
a goal scorer.
Does Bent have any tricks?
Well, he can score goals.
That's a trick.
Which is a very good trick to have in your locker. If it's the only one you're going to have, it might as well be that. But he doesn't bring much else to the party, whereas Benteke seems to be the full shilling.
Package,
yeah.
Villa are at Chelsea next weekend. They couldn't, could they, Owen?
No, I think they absolutely could.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea have got to fly all the way back from a dismal performance in Japan, play Leeds in midweek, and then play Villa. Yeah. I mean, of course they could, yeah.
Yeah, well, let's talk a little bit about Chelsea. The story, when Rafa came in and began to get a few results in it, the Club World Cup could actually be really good for them because they get the chance to get away from that toxic atmosphere at the Bridge and win this thing, get a title, come home victorious. Hasn't quite worked out the way they wanted, has
no,
it?
No, they've gone to Japan and created another toxic atmosphere out in Japan. Now they're flying back to try and get away from it. So, no, it didn't quite work out the way they wanted. In fact, the most bothered the players looked was at the final whistle, when all of a sudden David Luiz was in floods of tears and they all looked absolutely gutted to have lost, whereas during the match they didn't seem to particularly care too much.
It was a really old-school football game. In fact, nothing much seemed to happen. These kind of two teams of different continents play. No team really wants to commit. And really, I mean, it was 90 minutes of drivel where probably Corinthians just about deserved it. Chelsea sort of came on towards the end. Torres had a decent chance, should have scored. But actually, 1-0 was probably a fair result, wasn't
it? Two steps forward, one step back for Torres as well. I mean, you know, and the commentators were obsessed with him in the semi-final, where they were saying, oh, he's got his touch back. It looks like Benitez has rejuvenated him. And then all throughout the final, it was, oh, it's the same old Torres, you know, looking hangdog and not putting away the couple of chances he had, or half chances.
You would back up the outspoken comments by the teenager Lucas Piazon about how the team just didn't have the desire?
Yeah, well, that's how it appears, you know, certainly. Until, again, as I say, till they lost, at which point they all seemed to crumple into floods of tears and then get forced to stand in the centre circle while Corinthians went berserk on the podium.
But. Yeah. Michael Cox is on the marking.net hammering Rafa Benitez and his inability to make any kind of tactical adjustments in this game and respond to the looming defeat.
Well, I'd quite like to have seen Luiz come out of defence again, because he did look at that was quite an encouraging experiment, I thought, in the semi-final where he played him in midfield as a defensive midfielder. And that, you know, I think that could work for them in future. But yeah, he didn't seem willing to change much, and it was strange that he left Oscar until he was 1-0 down to come on, you know.
Pretty much how Jonathan Wilson, author of The Outsider, which is available in all good bookshops, I'm sure he'll thank me for saying that, called it. Corinthians sort of, he said they got through the Copa Libertadores with sort of series of grinding out 1-0 wins, and so it came to pass here, and Chelsea didn't really seem to have any great plan to overcome them.
But the supposed showpiece of club football, it was a fairly dire affair, but between two teams who were sixth in their leagues.
Did Abramovich actually attend the match? He flew out to Japan, is that right?
I didn't actually see him. I saw Bruce Buck. I don't know if Abramovich is there or not.
All right, leave that one then. Yeah. Well, they're running out of things to actually win this year, Owen. So this Capital One Cup, League Cup.
Well, it was the point at which Frank Lampard was interviewed afterwards, and he said, obviously, we're going to concentrate on the league, with a, you know, slightly far away look in his eye. And the and as he struggled to remember the names of the Capital One Cup and the Europa League, you know, at that point, his face fell a little bit as he realised what he had in store for his final season. And you're right, they're sort of, you can see them potentially getting beat off Leeds, and then it becomes a struggle through to the end of the season for them.
Wait till he gets home and sees he's been linked with QPR.
Exactly.
His little face fall.
Well. New look winning QPR, of course, Barry. Adil Terapt, very much the star of this game, the derby victory over Fulham. And Harry read that with more choice words about the player he sold when he was Spurs manager, against his own wishes, because he didn't want to sell him, because he knew he'd come back to haunt him, etc. But he says he's I've had Di Canio, I've had all those top players, he's like them. He's a bit of a nut, he's hard work, but he's special, etc, etc. Yeah.
He also said he could be a top player. So, you know,
right. I mean, this is terrific that Harry's unleashed the genius, unlocked the secrets of Terapt by placing him a few metres to the towards the centre, and off he goes.
Although he's had a couple of games like that this season, where, and then the next three he's failed to perform. So let's see what he does next week. But it was, you know, it's a great goal and right. Great performance.
What he'll be doing in January probably, though, is heading off to the Africa Cup of Nations for Morocco, which is a bit of a blow, no, given that he's...
Yeah, and it sounds like he's not that enthused about going, although he strikes me as the kind of guy who struggles to get enthused about anything. But I think if the comments I read from him are correct, that he's only going because he'll get grief in Morocco for not going, you know, next time he's there. So it wasn't like, oh, it's my country, I really want to go and represent them. It was just, well, I should, because if I don't, you know, I'll get loads of grief next time I'm there on my holidays. And Harry apparently has asked him not to go, but it looks like he will be off.
But it's interesting, the momentum now, in terms of what Redknapp was saying a week or two ago about whether they'll spend in the January window. He says, you know, if they've got a fair chance of survival, then they will spend. And I think, you know,
have they got a fair chance of survival?
Well, I think they have. You know, another couple of wins and it looks starts to look very different, doesn't it? I mean, I saw Phil Beard, the QPR chief executive at Sports Personality last night. He says dropping. Well, not really dropping a name, no. Is it saying you saw Phil Beard, who's no one ever heard of? But
of all the people
Bradley
who were
exactly,
there,
yeah, Jeff Bradley Wiggins, Jess Ellis, Matt. You know,
can you believe people were paid 54 quid for a face ticket for that? There were 17,000 people paid there last night, paying punters.
It's been an extraordinary year of sport, and they were there to
but
see.
But for what? Some dizzy lights and a bit of high tempo
screen,
music.
Basically.
Anyway, my Phil Beard point
was basically that, you know, that he was looking at everything a lot more. Everything seemed a lot more upbeat now. He was able to actually watch Match of the Day for the first time and so on. And it sounded to me as though they would spend in January if they thought there was a fair chance of survival.
Right.
Redknapp was conjuring up the ghost of Portsmouth in 2005-06, I think, where he said that after their first win, they went on a run where they got 20 points from 10 games, and Cooper needs something similar for the next one. But I think they've got. They've got Chelsea up soon, and they've got a couple of other tough games as well. So.
Well, their next game is away to Newcastle on Saturday. Newcastle, of course, losing this weekend at home to Man City. Man United also winning, the situation at the top remaining unchanged. QPR, how many points have they got? They're off the bottom of the table now, which is something.
Yeah, they've got 10 points. They're only five off safety.
10 teams have had 10 points or less after 17 matches before. 8 of them went down. 2 did survive, though, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
Is it they've got 6 points from 12 since Harry took over? Or is it 5 from 9?
Yeah, six from 12.
And he said, you know, if they can continue that, they will stay up. But it's difficult to see them continuing that.
Well, just got to believe, Barry. Just got to believe. What should we do next? We mentioned the fact that the top of the table situation is unchanged. Norwich roaring up to 7th place with a 2-1 win against Wigan. 10 games, is it?
It is 10 and five wins in a row at home. Kind of interesting. 20 years ago today, first season of the Premier League, Norwich were top of the table by 5 points from Villa and 6 from Manchester United. So.
Wow.
Maybe the glory days. We all remember Jeremy Goss in the Olympic Stadium. Maybe they might yet return.
I remember Jeremy Goss not doing it, of course, at the San Siro in the subsequent match. Well, I sat next to Nicola Bertie, a story I do like to wheel out whenever possible.
He was a good-looking chap, wasn't he?
He's a lovely chap, very personable man, very personable.
What's he up to these days, you know?
Yeah, where is he now? Nobody really knows. Well, I'm sure somebody knows, but he's gone really off the radar, which is funny because for so long he was such a high-profile character with his schoolboy parting and his long shorts and his cheery grin and his easy caress of the nape of the neck for a young English reporter. All those things, most people really noticed him at Italia 90, no? The cheeky grin, all that stuff. The amazing goal scored, was it against Bayern Munich, I think, in the UEFA Cup? Oh, it was a kind of one end to the other run. Brilliant goal. And then he went to Spurs. Northern Spirit was his last club, 2001-2002. But I don't know what's happened to him. Nicola, if you're out there, give
lost
us a call.
In the Outback.
Maybe. I wonder what he's up to, you know? It's rare for a footballer of that kind of that era to disappear so completely, no?
So what's Scalacci doing now?
Oh, Totò Schillaci. That's a very good question as well. He got a hair transplant and started appearing on the Italian version of... Well, it was kind of like an Italian... It was Celebrity Love Island, Italian style. He did really, really well. He did.
How do you do really well on that?
Well, you kind of don't get voted off. Yeah. Good. There are a couple of major things that we haven't talked about yet. Let's save those for part two. Now, Mario Balotelli all over the papers today appealing to the Premier League because he doesn't want to pay about a third of £1 million worth of fines to Manchester City, which they've just suddenly dropped on his lap.
That's right. I mean, kind of having run out of friends at Manchester City, he's now running to the Premier League to see if he can get out of paying these fines, which would seem unlikely, I would suggest, given the extent to which Mancini's protected him for the entire time he's been at City. So, yeah, I don't think he'd have much chance at tribunal, but we'll see.
Well, beyond the money involved, does this not signal a kind of decisive move in the kind of end game between Man City and Balotelli and his agent Mino Raiola, who's always keen to look for fresh options?
You would think so, although, you know, you get to the point where you wonder who's going to take him at the sort of price that Manchester City might want, because they want to recoup some of their money, won't they? So
you'd think, but then they have a bit of a history of paying people to go elsewhere.
That's also true, although if you remember Tevez, they drew a line in the sand and were very, very definite they weren't going to let him go on the cheap. So I don't know, we'll see. I suppose if they can get a good price for him back in Italy, then they probably take it, you would imagine. I mean, it felt like a Rubicon had been crossed, doesn't it, in the last sort of couple of weeks with him and Mancini, who's always protected him, as I say, up till then.
But who could afford him in Italy? And who could afford him, and A, and B, who'd want him? I mean, Juve possibly, but they wouldn't want him, surely.
I don't think Juve would want him. I don't think Conte would have any truck with that kind of business.
You go back to Inter?
I don't think... I mean, even Inter, even Moratti with his... With his bizarre transfer policy, I can't see him taking it back. Also because of this whole... The fact that Balotelli's actually a Milan fan and wore the Milan jersey. And Berlusconi is now engaged to... Is she 20 or something?
27, I
27,
think.
Oh, all right. All right.
She's very pretty.
She is.
He's done well.
She's even more beautiful on the inside, I can reveal, after reading Sylvia's comments. Coincidentally, he's up for re-election and is coincidentally talking about making big signings for Milan.
Ah.
Yeah. So it's been a busy week for Silvio, and he has said that Mario Balotelli is a dream, but I don't think he's practically, in practical terms, that he is the answer for them. I don't think that the people who actually make the decisions, like Berlusconi's daughter and Galliani at the club, will actually be going anywhere near him. I could be wrong.
We should flag up while we're talking about Manchester City, how well they played, particularly in the first half against Newcastle. It was perhaps their best
flag it up
half of the season. They're very impressive.
Consider it flagged.
Samin Azri is going to be out for a few weeks, which I think may affect their attacking flow a little bit. But you know, they
will help them. Bear in mind how he's been playing.
Well, that's true. But they were very, very impressive.
They must like playing up there, because I mean that was a sort of turning point in the title race last year, wasn't it? That Yaya Toure performance, and again they seem to play. They did play really well.
Yeah. And Yaya Toure again on the score. Well, on the score sheet again this time. So yeah, good. Right, West Brom against West Ham. You said this was the worst game. Was this the worst game of the day or the week or what, Barry?
Well, it was the worst game of two Premier League games yesterday, which you know isn't too damning an indictment to say that. I just thought it was a very poor game. Not much to offer.
John Ashton, considering it in the category. In fact, he invited readers of the 10 talking points about the Premier League today to come up with their own worst games ever. He stipulates that it has to be a 0-0, because however bad the game is, goals are quite interesting. And also it has to be in a match that ultimately means nothing, because if it's like a World Cup final, and there have been some stinkers there, then it, you know, there is still the fact that you're winning.
Well, do you remember we were in Vienna and I watched that? Was it France-Romania?
I remember
the 0-0, yeah. Was there was a video vile. There was a video of you watching it in the pub, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because you were asking me about this earlier, and nothing sprang to mind. But I'm struggling to think of a worse match I've seen than that particular
one. There was a Switzerland game in the 2006 World Cup, which I think
might be... Ukraine as well.
Was Ukraine, right. Yeah, that was awful.
There's been some pretty dire England friendlies, even ones that haven't finished 0-0.
Well, that's true.
Pretty ropey ones. My first match, actually, I was thinking when we were talking about this earlier, my first match was Chelsea v Leeds, when both were very much down on their luck in the early 80s, and that was a dire 0-0. It's a surprise everyone went back.
So right, Chelsea-Leeds, of course, will lead to Chelsea this Wednesday, so...
Indeed,
so
yeah.
Asher's
symmetry.
Ashers was at the Hawthorns yesterday. He was doing the report on that. I think he said it was...
No, no, he said there was a worse game that he'd seen. I can't remember what it was. I think it was Spurs against Southampton or something, from a cup.
Right.
From a while back. Mine would be a Rome derby, strangely, the whole thing about this particular Rome derby was that the two teams were on the edge of the relegation zone, and therefore it was a Rome derby that would be keenly contested as never before. Each team had the chance to put their bitter rivals right in, you know, the trouble. And Di Canio on one side, Cassano on the other. So great days. Anyway, the game kicks off, and Cassano just wanders over to Di Canio, and Di Canio cups his hand over his mouth and mutters something. Cassano nods, and then the two teams basically spent 90 minutes passing the ball around between themselves, 0-0 in a Rome derby. It was astonishing.
In Italian football, there was a
in a Rome derby with Di Canio on the pitch, he basically said, "Oh, it was astonishing." And the fans were, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of the game, Di Canio threw his jersey to the Lazio ultras, and they threw it back. That's how disgraceful a performance it was.
Mine was probably Luton Arsenal, I think, 1986. It was a nil, only one shot on target. Mark Steen.
But Luton dream of playing Arsenal now. So.
Well, but Luton have a brilliant record against Arsenal. If memory serves, in the league, I think they last eight games they've won three and drawn five, I think. And obviously there was the Littles Cup victory as well.
It's one of
the, you know, at home this is. But yeah, I used to go and watch Luton Arsenal.
When was the last of those eight games?
No. I think the last time Luton lost at home to Arsenal was early 80s. I think it's what, 81, 82, something like that.
Right. Just stay clear of playing them and you can keep saying that. Fantastic. What we haven't discussed yet from this weekend is, more scenes that you really don't want to see in football. Marouane and Fellaini, the whole Stoke-Everton thing. A 1-1 draw.
Yep.
But what was Fellaini thinking?
That's not being headbutting by a giant sponge, though, isn't it? I mean, kind of clearly, that's probably why Shawcross didn't go down, because he was trapped in his...
Shawcross was preternaturally, I think is the expression, calm, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Not just that one incident, but all of them. The face palm off...
It was quite an extraordinary sequence of...
Yeah. But it was like Fellaini set out to just kind of destroy his Premier League career in one match.
Is it conceivable that he wants Christmas off? And was trying to get sent off so he could get suspended. I'm always deeply suspicious of, you know, I like to keep an eye out for footballers around this time of year. You're thinking, right, who people that you suspect might want a week off for Christmas and
or whatever religious festival there are.
Do they get other religious festivals that are available?
Yeah,
or he quite fancies a move and thinks he might need a few days to tie up the loose ends and look for new
maps. People are talking now about that Fellaini might get a 3-match ban.
Oh, I think upwards of there.
Because Joey Barton got 12 matches for his initial elbow, and because it was his second red card of the season, that was 4 matches, and then a kick at Aguero, which wasn't that much of a kick, but a kick nonetheless, 5 matches, and then an attempted headbutt. He got 3 for that, so that's his 12. Now, I checked, Fellaini's already on 6 yellow cards this season. Should have got at least 1 red yesterday, if not 2, and possibly 3. So is it conceivable that he could get 10 or more games?
But it's interesting, though, isn't it? You end up in sort of double jeopardy, because if you obviously got sent off for the first one, then he wouldn't have been able to do it. So because the referee missed the first, then do you end up saying, well, you would have got 3 red cards, therefore you're banned for 9 matches?
And as Tony Pulis said, it's not Stoke who are going to benefit from any punishment he gets. It's Stoke's rivals because he'll be suspended for those games. So, you know, that's a fair point as well. But
very fair.
Yeah, David Moyes was rightfully angry. Fellaini's now apologised. I don't think he'll get as many matches as Barton. I'm not sure exactly what the rules are, but I suspect Joey might have got a little Barton tax in with his suspension as well.
But it's quite possible that if he is angling for a move, or if anybody's hovering around him, that he has now played his last game for Everton.
True. But don't you think, though, it's about time referees clamp down on wrestling, shirt pulling and everything in the box?
Well, they're busy people.
Yeah, no, but I remember Fernando Herrero when he pulled Niall Quinn in the 2002 World Cup and Ireland got a penalty from a free kick. It was like, you know, what's this? And it was so strange it actually happened. That's probably the last time I can remember something like that happening. And you kind of think it happens every week. They should be doing something about it. I mean, all we need is obviously the free kick's taken, then you award a penalty. It'll resolve itself in a month, I reckon. We have some good high-scoring games in the meantime.
Everton did have a penalty called against them for shirt pulling. When was that? It was against Spurs, wasn't it, a couple of weeks ago? And it was Leon Osman who got So, no, I mean, they do sometimes call them. Everton got a shirt-pulling penalty called against them a couple of weeks ago against Spurs. But, as you say, it's
not much consistency.
Morales is out too. He's done his hamstring. So things looking a little bit bleak there for Everton.
Yeah, they're going to be a bit threadbare in midfield. Until
Landon Donovan arrives.
Is he on his way?
I'm sure he is, isn't he?
Annual
that time of year on his sleigh. Right. Is that all the Premier League? I think it might be.
We haven't mentioned Manchester United.
Well, we kind of did
it in passing.
Go on, mention Man United then.
I think it's quite interesting about United is they've not drawn a single game yet so far in the Premier League, and their only defeat has come against teams in the top seven. You know, so the 12 matches against team 8 to 20, they've won every single one of them.
They're not playing well.
I think there's a good point in comparison. I was doing some stats earlier. 9 of their 14 wins this season have been by one goal. So a lot of the games have been quite tight. Mm. And compare that to Barcelona. They've won 15 times this season. Only 5 of their wins have been by one goal.
And six
have been, six by more than 3 goals.
Are you suggesting that Man United may not be as good as Barcelona?
That's very controversial.
No, but you're making that comparison that Barcelona have won all but one of their games, but they're winning much more convincingly than Manchester United.
A better team in a worse league are doing better than Man United.
I don't think, are you really saying the league is much worse than the Premier League?
Yeah. Although, actually, I mean, that's a default reaction.
Let's go to Bilbao beating United in the Europa League last season.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely right.
Let's look at
the Europa League.
Whacking Chelsea in the Super Cup.
All right.
There are some very bad teams in the Premier League.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I take that all back.
There's some very bad teams in the league as well. But yeah.
Should we dial up Sid now in penance? Yeah. Should we give Sid his chance to have his say? Because he loves a question about which league is better. Let's see what he says. Sid!
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey! I can't believe it. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Hi. Where are you today, Sid?
I'm in Oslo.
It sounded, for an extraordinary moment, like you said you were in Oslo, Sid.
Yeah, I am in Oslo, yeah.
What are you doing there?
Well, at the moment, I'm trying to write a column.
Yeah, but why are you trying to do it in Oslo?
Because I was here last night working.
All right.
Doing the Madrid and Barcelona games.
In Oslo?
In Oslo.
Now, are you... Sid...
Norwegians have televisions as well, you know.
So are you commentating on Norwegian TV?
Not commentating.
Presenting on Norwegian TV?
Well, not presenting really either. Punditrying, if punditrying.
Oh, right, fantastic. So you're a guest. That's fantastic, Sid. What channel is that then?
Seymour,
okay. Next time...
Jimbo's writing this
down,
Sid.
No, I'm not, Barry. Come on, no. Next time you're on, or next time you're going to be on, give us a shout. You know, let us know on the Thursday, maybe, and then we can flag it up to our many Scandinavian friends.
Okay.
I thought everyone in Oslo supported Liverpool. Why would they be interested in Manchester United? And
apparently, the number of Liverpool fans here is extraordinary, yeah. Loads and loads of them. Yep. Although the guy, one of the guys I shared the set with last night is actually a QPR fan, so he's had quite a good weekend.
He certainly has. Sid... Just wondering what your opinion is. Which is the best football league, Premier League or the Liga?
It depends how you want to judge it. I think if you judge it overall as a league, I think the Premier League gets a lot of things right. The Spanish league gets horribly, horribly wrong.
But not in business terms. In terms of competitiveness. In terms of if you were to put 20 Premier League teams against their 20 counterparts in the Liga, what would be the aggregate score?
Good question. Madrid and Barcelona would be the top two, I think, in the English league without doubt. But I think beyond them, there's a little bit more weakness. But I think it's more because those two are so good than because the rest are really bad.
Right.
But structurally, the rest are in trouble.
Say under your model, we'd have 220 players on either side, which would make for an interesting.
Well, I'm thinking it'd be like Davis Cup. You'd have Man United playing Barcelona and so on and so forth until you get to Reading against who's bottom of the Liga.
Deportivo.
I'll just check the league table. Deportivo
are
bottom, and they're
absolutely
awful.
But we could have a game like, those two English villages where there's like 200 people aside of the wall game. We could have
from England to Spain.
20 players from each, 20 squad players from each team in Spain. So you've 400 players aside.
Right.
Just throw a football into the middle of them, and last man standing wins.
Christmas entertainment. Who needs superstars or world's strongest man?
You'd need world's strongest man.
You definitely need world's strongest man.
All right, Sid, let's talk about the Liga for a second. 13 points now between Barcelona and Real Madrid. Kimmo Sascilati, I'm sorry about that if the pronunciation's wrong, posts in Jose Mourinho, the special once. I like that.
Nasty. Yeah. Mourinho gave up last night. He said that 13 points is too many. He said, we can't worry about whether we finish first, second or third now. We just have to carry on because that's what Real Madrid do. But the league is practically impossible. Mm. To be honest with you, I think he's right. But it was noticeable that he was so resigned to it. They're going to concentrate on the cups. And in a nice twist on a normal cliche, time to concentrate on the cups.
Right. And the other day you were saying that he looked lost, poor chap. yesterday.
Yeah, he did in the Copa del Rey, and it was similar again last night. He had a big confrontation with a journalist on Saturday, really quite nasty, actually, the way in which it happened. But on Sunday, there was no fighting him at all.
All right. They drew 2-2 with Espanyol. Interesting that you had Atletico Madrid taking on Barcelona and Espanyol taking on Real Madrid. And Espanyol looked good then, did they?
Goodish. I wouldn't say they were good. Espanyol against Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid against Barcelona has happened, I think, for the last three or four seasons. The league does it deliberately. I'm not quite sure if they think there's some particular reason why they should do that. Madrid dropped points the way that they dropped points at the back end a couple of seasons ago, which is 2-1 up, thinking it's easy, and then get caught very late on. Of course, then there's no time to react, which is different to the way they dropped points so far this season, which has been that they just haven't been very good. And Madrid weren't good last night, but they had two or three chances and should have probably put it out of sight. Espanyol, I suppose you'd say, defended better. They're more aggressive. Under Aguirre, they've now drawn three in a row. So they're certainly starting to get things right. They're a bit more competitive than they were. But it just wasn't a great game.
But the Barcelona Atletico Madrid game certainly was, particularly the first half, Sid, or first 55 minutes. It was sensational, wasn't it?
Do you know what? I think the last 55 minutes were brilliant as well. And I think what's happened is that Barcelona have raised the bar and Messi have raised the bar so high now that we're not satisfied just with seeing a team play brilliantly, because Barcelona played brilliantly without really looking for the goal because they didn't need to. And the control and the passing in the last half an hour was incredible. But of course, that's just Barcelona doing what they do, and it wasn't very exciting. As you say, the first 50 minutes was really exciting, and Atletico were breaking quickly. Falcao had three chances and got scored the third and doesn't normally miss. He had one against the post, one wide. Brilliantly taken goal for the other one. All five goals were fantastic. But it did feel, this is the weird thing about it for me, it felt like there was something missing until Messi got his second, as if we were not satisfied with just seeing a really brilliant game. And I thought it was fantastic. Atletico Madrid really, really good. But after the game, Diego Simeone came out and said, the trouble is Barcelona just playing a different league to everyone else. They're just far too good. This league's boring.
Hmm. Is it 16 now in eight games? 16 goals in eight games for Messi?
Leo Messi, in his last eight starts, has scored twice every single time. It's just
amazing.
Bonkers. Which is why, as I say, in the 87th minute, when he'd only scored one, you were sort of sitting there thinking, it's rubbish.
Mm. Yeah. Anybody else got any questions for Sid?
What's the weather like in Oslo?
Yeah.
It was freezing and snowy when I got here today, but it's gone a bit kind of wet and grey today.
Sid, can I ask about Levante? I saw they won again. They're fifth, I think. Incredible, really, having made the Europa League last season. They're actually, although it's unlikely, pushing for a Champions League spot.
Yeah, and playing really well in the Europa League as well. The amazing thing about Levante is that, you say, with the squad that they've got, didn't genuinely expect them to be able to keep doing it in both domestically and in European football. The thing about Levante is they're a team that objectively you shouldn't like, because they're dirty, they're not great to watch. There's something kind of a bit rough around the edges about them, or very rough around the edges about them. And yet somehow there's a sort of almost an endearing comedy factor to their violence that actually makes them quite good fun. And because you know they've got no money, because you know that these are players who've largely been around the block a bit, largely haven't had the chance to prove themselves and really are doing it now, it's quite difficult not to warm to them, even though, as I say, objectively, you shouldn't really like them.
Are they the crazy gang of Spanish football?
A little bit. There's a certain element of that, yeah. They're a bit like... I wrote about them a couple of years ago and called them the Expendables, because they're a whole load of sort of people who once upon a time were supposed to be good, although never really were very good. And they came together and actually turned out to be an all right team.
Brilliant, Sid. Sid, last weekend of the Liga season coming up, this weekend. Well, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Liga season before Christmas, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll chat with you on Thursday about that, yeah?
Okay, brilliant.
Nice one. Thanks, Sid. Sid Lowe in Oslo. Well, much more still to come in part three of today's show, including Owen, your trip to Qatar. A little bit of Italian for you, Barry. Some posts and maybe some other bits as well. Woo! Those posts then. We were discussing clubs who let players go and then buy them back for loads of money. And somebody's mentioning a really famous example, which I've now forgotten. Oh, it was an Italian club who did this and it was ridiculous. Oh, yeah, Adriano, Inter, who let him go to Parma and had to spend masses to bring him back. And then he basically just sat in his villa and got drunk, and it was a disaster. But lots of other examples that have been put in. Ashman94 says, I'm pretty sure Marco Reus was sold by Dortmund, then bought back for 17 million euros this summer. Is that true, Sean?
Yep.
That's true. Blood Clot mentions Jordi Alba, released by Barca for free, bought back for 14 million. Freddie Jablanski with the same one. Graham Lasso, he adds in there, sold by Chelsea to Blackburn for 700,000 in 93. 4 years later, bought back for 5 million. Fabregas coming up quite a lot. Couple of people. Oh, here's Grum with Barber going from Ajax to Liverpool, 14 million, and then back to Ajax on a free. That's not bad. And how about Nelson Ratcliffe and Gulchin Turklani, I think? Not quite the same thing. Newcastle famously star Alan Shearer in goals and then never picked him when he had a trial there as a schoolboy. And 10 years later, he cost them a world record, £15 million. Is that true? They put Alan Shearer in goal?
I think that's right. Peter Beardsley let go as well, didn't they? And then that's...
Oh, yeah. Mm. Crazy, isn't it? Yeah, anyway, now, you went to Qatar.
I did, yeah.
Why?
Very interesting. It was the Doha Goals Conference, which I think was an attempt by the Emir and the various people he's put in place to run his sporting interests to try and kind of build the profile of them as a sporting nation, etc. So there's all these sort of captains of the sporting industry all converging on a hotel in Qatar to talk about goals.
Right, okay. Jonathan Wilson should have been there. He should have been picketing the event.
Exactly.
Careful now.
Down with goals.
So, right, and obviously you went there as well with half an eye on how their preparations are going.
Yeah, I basically went there to sort of see the people who are behind their 2022 World Cup plans and see various bits of the desert that are going to turn into variously cities, stadiums, highways and railways.
Right, did they pay for your trip, Owen?
They did, right. which we did acknowledge in our new editorial policy. Yeah.
All right, a lot of suspicion and cynicism regards their plans to basically air condition an entire section
country.
Of the planet. Yeah.
Yeah.
What
quite rightly.
What's your feeling now, having been to the squares of desert that they're going to build all this?
I mean, it's extraordinary. The level of construction there and the amount of money they're pouring in is extraordinary, and you come away sort of feeling that you don't doubt they'll pull it off. Whether it's a good idea for them to pull it off is quite another matter. And you know, kind of they'll show you all these plans and they'll tell you all the amount they're investing in, and they'll convince you of certainly their sort of sincerely held beliefs that it's great to bring football to this part of the world and their bridge between East and West and all the rest of it. Then you get into a taxi and the taxi driver says, I would never go outside in July. And you just think, this is, you know, on some levels, completely bonkers.
Mm. And also, I mean, I was going to ask, for those people among us who like a drink, what's their policy on that, and what's the policy on people who are gay and want to go? Are the rules, you know, the strict rules they have governing homosexuality in Qatar?
There's all sorts of questions. There's big questions about their human rights record. There's big questions about the immigrant workforces who are building all these stadiums and roads and cities. As you say, there's questions about gay rights. As far as alcohol goes, they're very reassuring. They say, oh, in all the fan zones, you'll be able to get a drink. But that sort of raises the spectre of these kind of zones where you funnel all these football fans and sort of, you know, and allow them to have a drink. You can get a drink in all the Western-owned hotels. So on about the third night we were there, the British ambassador took pity on me and took me off to some hotel where he managed to procure me a drink.
I'm only thinking of Barry. I'm thinking of him.
Right. Good.
But it's difficult. I mean, you constantly have to check yourself to make sure you're not just viewing this through Western eyes and kind of thinking, you know, kind of that we're the only place we can host World Cups is kind of in established footballing nations. But at the same time, you just think off the back of a South African World Cup, then a Brazilian World Cup, which I'm sure would be brilliant but slightly chaotic, and then a Russian World Cup, which involve huge long flights across
amongst
a massive
other
country,
problems, yeah.
among other problems, you know, not least not having a free press and so on. Yeah. Then going to Qatar, you know, it just feels to me like FIFA don't get the balance right. The IOC, on the other hand, tried to sort of leaven the mix a bit by kind of making sure they return to some of the old heartlands as well as striking out into new areas. I mean, FIFA, you know, it's all about the land grab and all about the money, effectively.
Mm.
Which vice would you find it easier to abstain from for 3 weeks?
Of the ones that I currently practice?
Well, I'd say... pleasures of the flesh or alcohol.
Well, there are lots that I could get. I could go
without sex for 3 weeks, no problem. But
you could, yeah.
Not without a drink, I think I'd struggle.
Right.
And it's one of those things, isn't it? As soon as you're told that you can't have something immediately, you know, I simply must have a drink.
Did I see something while you were in Doha? You were off to watch Oscar Pistorius race against a horse.
This was the most interesting thing, obviously, that happened. In a ludicrous PR stunt, they had Oscar Pistorius racing against an Arabian stallion.
Right.
And Pistorius won.
Did he?
Yeah, although the stallion was kind of...
Did it raise an objection about the length of his blade?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Was there a jockey on board?
There was a jockey on board.
Right. Not on Pistorius.
It was utterly shambolic, presented by the sort of Al Jazeeran equivalent of Alan Partridge, you know, who sort of waffled on for hours and hours before it actually got going, and then actually missed the start of the race because
Isn't
he was still talking.
Isn't the Al Jazeeran equivalent of Alan Partridge HD Gary Lineker?
Well, actually, one night in my hotel, I did flick through the channels, and there, first of all, you get Lineker, and then you flick onto the next channel, and there's Keys and Gray, sort of beamed in from some ghostly satellite. Yeah.
How is it possible then? Horses are faster, by my understanding, than human beings. So how is it?
It didn't seem to have a great start. The horse seemed sort of, you know, a bit confused at the beginning about what exactly was going on.
Not
by
surprised.
Which point, Pistorius was halfway down this specially constructed track.
Presumably, they weren't racing over a mile and a half or whatever.
No, it was about 100 yards, I think. Yeah.
There were no fences or anything for the horse to kind of giddy up over.
No, certainly right. Not. No man-made hotels or, you know, kind of new highways for the horse to gallop down.
Oh, rotten. So, all very interesting. And that's, when is that?
2022, yeah. Right. So they've got just under 10 years, although there's going to be this interminable row over whether or not they move it to the winter before then. Because
yeah, any fresh word on that?
Platini's very much still angling for it. There's this strange coalition between France and Qatar whereby it was strongly rumoured that Sarkozy put pressure on Platini to vote for Qatar because of their trade links and so on. Strenuously denied rumours. And then ever since, Platini's been going around saying he wants the World Cup to move to the winter because it'd be much better for the players and so on, even though they won it on the basis of being in the summer. So this has been going back and forth. The Premier League obviously very much against the idea. The NBA in America are very much against the idea. All the leagues around the world are very much against the idea. But you tend to think that it doesn't seem to be going away because it's the only way you can guarantee that it'll be played anywhere near sensible temperatures.
Yeah, fair enough. All right then. Well, we could mention financial fair play and Man City's 99 million losses, but I guess we'll have to wait to 2014 to see what UEFA think about that.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's all to do with whether or not these rules actually bite or not, you know, right. And everyone's speculating on to what extent City can write off the money they're putting into this Etihad campus and to what extent the Etihad deal is legal or not. And I think, you know, politically, as much as anything, UEFA, having made such a big play of them, have got to show that these rules have teeth and you can't drive a cart and horses through them. So, but you're right, we'll have to wait and see. There's no point really speculating now until UEFA have run the numbers.
Now, let's finish off, Barry, with a very quick mention for Italy. You got any questions you want to ask?
No.
Okay. Antonio Conte's back, you know.
Yeah, his ban is up.
That's right.
How did he get on?
Well, they've had two games now. 1-0 win away to Palermo was last week. This week, it was his first game back at home at Juventus Arena. And they absolutely stormed the first half against, who were they playing? Atalanta. 3-0, looking brilliant. They really look good. And the big question there is, you know, how good would they look with Drogba stuck on the front of them? Because yesterday's Gazzetta, for example, was saying, well, but now it's a done deal. They've agreed a season and a half deal. A slight issue about money. Obviously, the fact that he's heading off to the Africa Cup of Nations is not ideal, but they're quite happy to tick along in Serie A. They're now 5 points clear at the top. Various papers are already calling them champions. And what they really want him for is the Champions League, where he's seen as the missing piece. But strangely today, Conte himself is coming out and saying, "We know we're not getting Drogba or any top players because we don't have the money. We're just going to live within our means." I don't think that's true at all. They certainly do have the money to get him. It's not an excessive amount that they're talking about either.
He's obviously keen to come back, isn't he? I mean, kind of, he clearly, it seems to me, he feels he's made a mistake. He spent most of the time sort of since that, you know, since they went on their break in China, hanging around at Stamford Bridge or turning up at awards dues or whatever. You know, he clearly wants to get back into a proper
play
top
that Champions
football.
League again, yeah. Defend his Champions League title. So Inter, anyway, slipping a couple of points further back from Juve, but they stay second because Napoli, who Inter beat last weekend, then went and lost at home to Bologna, the big turn-up this weekend. I wonder if anything, if maybe there's been some impact on their concentration in this game from the court case, which the verdict's due on either today or tomorrow. But worth mentioning in the Bologna goals, they scored three of them. Bologna took the lead, Napoli scored two, and then Bologna came back with an absolutely amazing overhead volley from Panagiotis Kone. The cross coming in from the right is a wonderful scissor kick thing. Seek it out. Anyway,
it seems to be a rash of overhead goals this season.
Yeah, there does, doesn't there? I wonder if the laws of gravity have tweaked or something. Anyway, so but then Bologna win it at the death, and I'm just wondering whether there's been some, you know, the fact that Napoli are maybe going to lose 2 points, 1 point penalty, because this goes back to the betting affair, and I think he's their third choice goalkeeper has basically been caught. And he's one of the players who's admitted the fact that he tried to fix a game. And he says he spoke to Paolo Cannavaro, the club captain and another player, under the showers. He kind of, you know, while they were standing there having their post-training showers, he said, what about throwing this game against Sampdoria? This is from two seasons ago. And he says they both said no, but they didn't report it because that's a really, really major issue. And you can understand why, because you have to get this kind of thing reported, otherwise it's just going to continue. Because they didn't report it, they are now facing nine months bans, which for Napoli is a huge thing. Cannavaro is like the most important defender right now. And the club are also facing a possible points penalty, even though there's no suggestion of the club were complicit in it, just because they are employees of the club. Very harsh rules.
Seems a bit harsh, but at the same time you can understand it, can't you?
Well, you can, and especially because then these rules are always harsh the first time, and then they appeal and it always gets reduced, etc. I mean, this is what we're seeing at the moment with Juve's Calciopoli thing. But anyway, so that's, as I say, the verdict's due on that either today or tomorrow, and that could have a little bit of an influence on the situation at the top of the Italian table. And on that note, I think we've probably come to the end of today's Football Weekly. We have to leave a little something for Football Weekly Extra, of course, which is coming up on Thursday. Barry, many thanks for joining us. You're about to head downstairs and host a live quiz.
Apparently so, yes.
Which is going to be over by the time this gets
out. It will be over by the time this gets out. But if you participated and didn't win, that you should have tried a little bit harder.
Absolutely.
Or cheated, even.
Cheated.
Which I suspect is what
most
people
initiative.
Will do. Yes.
Yeah. Sean.
Thank you.
Goodbye. Owen.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks for joining us today. Thanks, producer Matt Hill. Guest producer Matt Hill. And we'll be back, as I say, on Thursday. Have a super time till then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.